he'd thought. Finally, completely, truly. And yet, I'm still here. Then he hadn't understood. So he'd gone back to the place that had started it all, the capital of Tarragon. The last time he'd been there, it had been inhabited only by the dead and the crows that feasted upon them. Now, however, it was a bustling city, vibrant and full of life. Despite himself, it had given him hope. The Temple of Absence had been reconstructed. The Endless Pit was once more available for the truly worthy, those Terrans who had achieved all seven virtues, to commune with their god. Bear had appealed to the priest there. "I am," he'd started to say, but the priest had interrupted him. "I know who you are," the woman had said. In the manner of most Terran women, her scalp was bare, save for the long braid that identified her as a priest of absence. "You are welcome here, as your mother was."
"How can you know such things?"
Bear had asked.
"Never mind that. Do what you came to do."
So Bear had. He'd descended into that great pit of nothingness. He'd spent hours in the dark, listening, waiting. Others would have gone mad, but the centuries had made him immune to such evils. Eventually, his patience had been rewarded.
"The great evil will return," a voice had said.
It came not to his ears, but to his mind. It was absence, but not only. The voice, a combination of depth and familiarity beyond his comprehension.
"Mother?"
he'd said, his own voice emerging as meek as the squeak of a mouse.
"Yes, we are."
"We?"
"Yes, child."
Though he'd been a man grown for many years, Bear hadn't refuted the label. In the presence of his mother, he'd only ever felt like a child.
"I don't understand."
"You will. You have done well. I'm proud of you."
"Then let me be with you. It's all I've ever wanted."
"I know. But be patient for a while longer. Your role is not yet complete."
He'd remembered the first words the god, who was now partly his mother, had said to him from the darkness.
"The great evil will return."
"Is the paint-marked one still alive?"
he'd asked. Her laughter was so out of place that he'd flinched.
"I'm sorry, child. I don't mean to make light of such things, but no, Clargra is dead forever. But he was the only one who led the darkness to the Four Kingdoms. The true evil was his army, those who gnash their teeth in the dark and dream of ravaging flesh and drinking blood. They are the cockroaches that cannot be exterminated by any but you."
"What? No."
If the battle for the fall of all things had been won by the human, Orion, Nymph, and Ghazi alliance, then every barbarian would have been killed.
"There are none left. The plague has been stamped out forever. Mother? Mother? Mother!"
But she, along with absence, had left him. Slowly he dragged himself out of the hole and back into the light. The next few decades had passed in a blur. Bare black boots had never stopped moving, travelling from one place to the next, staying out of sight of all living things save the birds and those creatures that lived under the shelter of the trees. He'd spent the time observing all that transpired after the great battle. He was there as the Garrick Sheary brood grew into an army, an Aes and Terrin's children bearing children of their own. Those children bore more children, the cycle of life continuing with each passing generation. He was there when Queen Anise finally passed on, her husband's tears wetting her skin like rain. He'd never seen so many mourners for a single person's death. Bear was there when Gareth Ironclad finally bore a child, an heir to the Eastern Throne. It was half nymph and half human, the mother one of the three sisters who had fought valiantly on that long-ago day. He'd been there watching when Whisper Sands finally opened the trade route into Calip. Now the famed silks and spices of the Desert Empire flowed like water into the other realms, much to the delight of their peoples.
Bear had been there when the Phoenicians had finally doused the last rebel flames seeking to return the southern continent to its old days of slavery and superiority. The trio of Falkenhoser, Shanti Parthena Lord, and Sonica Vade had given a series of rousing speeches that reunited their people in the common cause of peace. And Bear had been there when Queen Nora Loren Aris had had her first child, a daughter of her own. The babe's eyes were as blue as the sky, her hair as golden as the sun. From the moment she came into the world, Gaia Loren Aris Rose was the apple of her grandmother's eye, destined to be spoiled. And Rhea Loren had done just that, spoiling her granddaughter each and every day. Now. Standing atop the bleak, empty cliff, Bear wondered where the years had gone. The turn of yet another century was upon him. Why have I delayed this task for so long? He knew the reason. I didn't want to die. It had taken him a long time, but he'd finally admitted as much to himself. So he'd lived vicariously through the people he'd helped save, watching them, observing them, laughing and crying with them. It was a lonely life, but the only one he knew. Finally, however, he could deny his destiny no longer. Crimea was spread out before him as far as the eye could see, the boulder fields of rockland looking small in the distance. Recently, colonizers from the Four Kingdoms had arrived on the shores and begun to rebuild the cities that had once been the envy of the rest of the world. It was only a matter of time before the smell of blood and flesh became too tantalizing for their hidden enemies living in these very mountains known as the Northern Fangs. Though Bear hadn't been able to find the remnants of the Horde, at least not yet, he could sense their presence in every waking moment he spent climbing and exploring. Sometimes he swore he could hear the rush of breath from their lips, the thud, thud, thud of their savage hearts beating in their pale, hairless chests. But each time he turned his head, he saw nothing but emptiness, his own restless imagination having fooled him once more. Though he wanted to believe his mother was wrong, that the great evil the world had faced was not still alive, would not rise again, he wouldn't allow himself to slip into the comforting arms of denial. It made sense, of course. When Clar Grah first led the Horde from their mountain sanctuary, he wouldn't have brought them all. Those too young or too old to fight would have been left behind. Almost 7 decades later, they would have grown into a formidable force, large enough to destroy cities. They are here, he thought. Somewhere. He turned his attention back toward the dark peaks rising overhead. The range was enormous, with more nooks and crannies than a fluffy northern roll just pulled from the oven. It would take time, years, to search them all, and even then the surviving barbarians might manage to hide themselves. Best get on with it, then, he thought, starting forward, determined to make his way through a tunnel he'd discovered earlier that day. He stopped suddenly, an idea appearing in his mind. He frowned, wondering why he hadn't thought of it sooner. The barbarians craved man-flesh like manna from heaven, and he was a man, at least partly. Perhaps all he needed to do was unlock the temptation a bit more. Rather than transitioning fully into a bear, he shifted only his hand, which thickened, growing thick tufts of dark fur and long claws. Hesitating for only a moment, he drew his razor-sharp claws across his opposite arm, which was still human. He didn't wince at the pain, only watched as the tracks he'd dug filled with bright red blood. He raised his arm and let the blood stream down his arm and onto his shoulder, the river splitting into two as it coursed down his back and chest. The coppery scent of blood permeating the air around him, he strode forward toward the dark tunnel nestled amongst the rocks. It hadn't worked. Bear had walked that tunnel all day and long into the night, taking its various tributaries as he made his way deeper into the heart of the mountains, navigating by touch alone, the darkness complete. He was lost, he knew, but then again, he'd been lost for many years. In some ways, he felt less lost now that he truly was. Now he stopped as the rough wall vanished to one side, the tunnel opening into a cavern. The sound of running water played musically against the backdrop of silence. He made his way toward the sound,
his feet finding the water and almost slipping beneath him on a smooth, slick rock. He managed to maintain his balance, dipping his hand into the water and using it to drink deeply, relishing the cold, clean liquid as it ran down the back of his throat. He was careful not to wash away the blood. Though the wound had clotted a while ago, the blood drying on his skin, the smell was still there. He finished sating his thirst and felt his way over to a large stone, which he used as a backrest as he plopped down to rest. He had some dried meat in his satchel, but it wouldn't last forever, and he didn't know when he might emerge from the darkness again, so he let his stomach rumble as he tried to sleep. He awoke with a start. It felt like he'd only just drifted off, but he couldn't be sure. He blinked, trying to see, but was met with a wall of flawless darkness. He remembered where he was and chuckled to himself. His stomach complained again, and he started to reach for the food in his pouch. Wait. He stopped, crinkling his nose, and trying to figure out what had awakened him. The only sound was the gurgle and laughter of moving water, and that was as fine a lullaby as any ever sung by a patient mother. Then what? Though he didn't mind the dark, a bit of sight would do him some good now, and in bear form his night vision was remarkably keen. His other senses would be heightened as well, he knew, so he gave himself over to the animal inside him and began to change. When the shift was complete, the blackness gave way to a grey world tinged with green. He could see several rock formations flanking the small underground river that had quenched his thirst. From the ceiling, stalactites grew, tiny glistening drops dangling from their tips like unshed tears. The small, beady, sightless eyes of several bats peered at him from the ceiling where they hung. "I must not be that far from an exit," he thought. The bats would need to leave the cavern to hunt, after all. Perhaps he would be able to follow them when they left. Something else shimmered. Silver coins winking in the dark, peering around the boulders. Eyes, larger than those of the bats, and not so few. He tried to count them, but found the number was ever increasing as they continued to emerge from the shadows. That's when he knew. His trap had worked. The bait, his own blood, had drawn the barbarians to him like moths to a flame. "This is it," he thought, shoving his heavy bear frame to his feet, his lips instinctively curling into a snarl that scraped from the back of his throat. His foes released guttural sounds of their own. A challenge. Though Bear knew this fight would likely go against him, he felt no fear. Driven by the years and years of regret at having turned away from the battle for survival all those years ago. This was his redemption. They came, driven into a frenzy by the smell of his blood, their pale bodies flashing across his vision as they splashed through the river, bounding up the rocky slope to where he waited. Bear batted the first barbarian away with a powerful paw, knocking it into several of the others. The next died under the strength of his powerful jaws as he clamped down on its throat even as it beat at his skull with heavy fists. More and more came, but he was a tornado of fur and claws and fangs, ending those who threatened the peace his mother, he and the fate marked, had worked so hard to achieve. He was not to be defeated, not on this day, not when he had the chance to save them all. The claws entered through his back, where one of the barbarians had snuck in behind. He threw his elbow back, dislodging the attacker, only to feel a sharp pain in his side, where another foe had darted in. Two barbarians jumped from a boulder they had scaled, landing on his head and biting at his ears and snout. Bear thrashed about, slashing and clawing and biting and kicking, killing as many as he could, for each he killed now was the equivalent of many more in the generations to come. Each year of peace his actions provided was a blessing. He was soaked in blood, both his and his enemies, and he felt his energy waning. Still he fought on, focused on making every second its own battle. More barbarians fell. Still more came, an endless tide built up over the last 7 decades. He roared, throwing his powerful arms out and tossing several barbarians away. He spun, slashing at anything close enough to hit. He bounded to the side to avoid one attack, pouncing on another enemy and ripping out its throat. They leapt upon him from all sides, determined to get their pound of flesh. Many hours later, Bear slumped down on his haunches. Blood spread beneath him, a growing pool that had already streamed into the underground river, tainting its clear waters. Nothing moved, save one barbarian. Badly injured, it dragged its way across the rough terrain, unable to resist the temptation of Bear's blood. Watching the creature, Bear pitied it, for it was a slave to its own nature. "You are the last of your kind," Bear snarled, uncertain whether the barbarian would understand him. It stared at him with hungry eyes, but didn't respond. Another foot closer. Another. Scrape, slide. Scrape, slide. Bear could feel the life ebbing out of him, but even one barbarian left was too many for his liking. He mustered the tiny amount of energy he still had, raising a single paw in anticipation. When it was finished, he toppled over, spent. The pain was so immense, he was almost numb to it. He felt the darkness tugging at his eyelids. "What if there are more?" he wondered. He couldn't know unless he survived to search another day. "I must survive."
"No,"
a voice said through the darkness. "Mother, I don't understand." Bear spoke in the common tongue, though he wasn't certain when he'd shifted back into a man, his body broken and bloody.
"It is your time."
"I don't want to die."
"I know. But it is not us who decide such things. You did well. I am proud of you."
"But what if
none survived? You have given the world a great gift." "Now be at peace, my child,"
his mother said,
"for you return to me."
Bear closed his eyes, truly feeling at peace for the first time since his mother's death. For he could see her. He could see his mother. Epilogue 5. Gwendolyn Storm. The Eastern Kingdom, Feria. Circa 600. If Gwendolyn Storm had a tail, surely she would be chasing it. Near on 7 decades of searching for something that might never be found did that to a person, even an Orion. The name was always on her lips, on the tip of her tongue, just waiting to be spoken. Ciri. 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 Her dreams, more and more, were consumed with dragonfire and adamantine scales, claw and tooth, beating wings and rushing wind.
"I'm going mad," Gwen surmised,
which somehow felt appropriate. When one's soul went mad, wasn't it right that their mind should go next? Gwen laughed quite loudly to herself, which only supported her theory. A trio of young Orion children stared at her, pointing, whispering behind cupped hands. Their legs dangled over the edge of a thick tree branch high above. Thick as thieves they were.
"And so young. What are they? 10? 11?
Gwen couldn't even guess. She hadn't seen children in a long time, her travels of late a solitary endeavour. She'd seen the wonders of the earth, from the fire-tipped mountains south of Tarragon to the foggy wetlands across the unexplored ocean. She hoped she never ran into Windy Sands, or the scholar would require a full accounting of all she'd seen.
"Sorry, my lady, I didn't take samples of all the flora and fauna, or any of it, actually."
No, she'd not been a sightseer. Even after all these years, she was of a single-minded focus. Find Ciri. At first, perhaps, her determination had been spurred by the deathbed vow she'd made to Empress Raven Sands, her friend. But now,
"I'm obsessed."
The word felt dirty, even in the privacy of her own mind. For what was wrong with searching for one's own soul? How could such a thing be considered bad?
"It's not," Gwen thought. "I'm coming, Ciri."
Words that had once been full of vim and vigour now felt empty.
"I'm exhausted,"
she admitted to herself. It was true she was no longer a young Orion of 90 name days, but a refined forest dweller over a century and a half old. Most would be nesting at this age. Hell, most would have children nesting by now. But Gwendolyn Storm, the hero-marked dragon rider of lore and legend, was completely and utterly alone. Or at least she had been for a while. Now, however, She couldn't hold back a very real smile, as a too familiar form approached at a distance. He was crook-backed and balanced precariously on a beautiful cane, constructed of Orion ore. It was made to look like a sword, though to Gwen's practiced eye it was not. Etched along what would have been the broadside were images of fate marks. There was the blue-eyed soul mark and Sir Dietrich's sword mark, Jai Jeru's justice mark, and a split key, each side of which were known as the half-marks. Nora Loren Aris's peace mark featured prominently, scattered all around the others. Even Bane's death mark had a place on the old man's cane. Second from the top was her own hero mark, the X with the squared-off corners, like some modified version of the symbol for 10. And, of course, the final marking engraved in the old king's walking stick was the three-leafed life mark. She felt a pang in her chest at the sight of it. And she knew. Gareth Ironclad felt the same shot to the heart each time he looked upon the symbol.
"Hello, old friend,"
Gareth said now, stopping to rest. He looked out of breath, and she knew he was. At 86, he was beyond the years reached by most humans. Though she was older too, she didn't feel it the way he did. "I still have a good 50 years left, if I'm lucky. 40, if I'm not." Gareth, however, wouldn't last another 5, a thought that made her feel magnificently sad. It was the curse of an Orion who had few Orion comrades, to outlive one's friends and loved ones.
"Hello,"
she said, speaking the greeting with an exaggerated drawl. Gareth liked such silliness, and she was determined to give him everything he liked and more. He grinned, his face twice as wrinkled as the last time she'd seen him over a decade ago. His hair was still thick, a shock of white atop his head. It reminded her of the snow-capped peaks of the Mournful Mountains.
"What? No grand entrance? You're losing your touch."
"Actually, you missed it. I've been waiting several hours for you to greet me. You couldn't have moved any faster."
Gareth laughed boisterously at that, until a cough interrupted his levity, doubling him over. Gwen went to him, rubbing his back while he spat out several thick-looking wads of phlegm.
"Are you ill?"
she asked, scrunching her forehead in concern.
"Old,"
he said, straightening up as best he could and grinning.
"Happens to us lowly humans. You, on the other hand, have not aged a day."
Perhaps not in appearance, Gwen thought. The long years were, however, beginning to take a toll on her body. She couldn't walk as far or as long, and she required more frequent rest stops. When she pinched her stomach, there was slightly more than skin to pinch.
"How do humans deal with it?"
she often wondered.
"So,"
Gareth said, craning his head to scan the sky above the forest. He didn't ask the question, for which Gwen was glad. She didn't want to answer. She shook her head once, immediately changing the subject.
"How is your son?"
"You'll have to ask him. He's off in search of adventure in Calypso."
"Sounds a lot like his father."
"Does it? I can't remember that far back."
"What do you have planned for my visit?"
"Planned? Well, my day usually consists of waking early to drink my herbal tea. Then my nursemaid bathes me. That's not embarrassing at all. Breakfast is 3 eggs and 12 hearty strips of bacon, though I barely eat more than 3 or 4 bites. Of course, I need something to wash it down with. Northern ale does the trick. Have you heard? They sell us mead in exchange for our armor. Who do you think is getting the better deal? Anyway, by then it's nearly lunch, which I also don't eat because it makes me feel ill. My afternoon typically consists of paperwork, which I never finish, and a long nap, which I always finish. I usually wake up just in time for supper, but I'm always falling asleep on my plate after such a long, hard day, so I usually skip dessert and turn in early. Would you care to join me for any or all of it?"
Though Gareth's monologue was tinged with his usual dryness of tone and comedic flair, Gwen could sense his frustration. What he'd just described sounded worse than madness or even death, a sentiment she voiced, knowing he would appreciate such dark humour.
"If I ever get to that point, put an arrow through my eye.
He chuckled, managing not to cough this time.
"Which one? Left or right? When you get old, you get a say in such important matters."
"Both," Gwen said without hesitation. "At the same time. I always wondered what that would look like." Gareth lifted his cane and pointed it at her.
"Done," he said.
Without his walking stick, he lost his balance and would have fallen if not for Gwen's help, her hand shooting out like a striking snake to grab his elbow.
"You still have the touch," Gareth said,
his eyes focusing on her cheek. Her hero mark hadn't flared. She hadn't required it in a long time.
"I can't stay long," Gwen said.
In truth, Ironwood, the place she'd once felt more comfortable than anywhere else, no longer felt like home. The only reason she returned once a decade was to visit Gareth.
"So only 3 months this time?"
Gareth said, a twinkle in his deep brown eyes. "More like 3 days."
"We'd best get started with our naps and baths, then," he said,
turning an about-face and heading off in the direction of the castle.
"Give me a head start, will you?"
"I'll meet you in the throne room in an hour," Gwen said.
"That old chair is hard on my bony arse. I'll be in bed."
"Jeez, you don't waste any time, Your Highness. Already trying to get me in the sack. Just like the old days."
"You're not my type,"
Gareth hollered over his shoulder.
"Food and wine are on me."
"Sounds fair," Gwen said, watching him go. Gwen's home had been consumed by the forest. The change was so significant that she almost missed the gate leading to the path leading to the tree. If not for an errant ray of sunlight slipping through the trees and reflecting off the gate's smudged surface, she might have walked right by. Now she ran her fingers over the surface of the gate, not so much reading the words etched on its face, which she'd memorized eons ago, but absorbing them, making them a part of her again. All the loves in her life, Alistair, Roan, Ciri, deserved to be felt each and every day, even when their images were becoming fuzzy in her mind, marred by time and experience. With that in mind, she pushed open the gate, channeling the iron-sheathed tangle of branches and weeds away from her. Vines parted like curtains, and she saw it. The tree. Her tree. The first time she'd kissed Alistair was here, high in its branches in an iron mesh hammock. She'd been so smitten with him then that he could have bedded her and she wouldn't have resisted. But he'd taken things slow, seeming to appreciate her much like a connoisseur appreciated a fine wine. From then on, they'd rendezvoused as often as they could escape the watchful eyes of her father, who, she'd assumed, would not approve of their human-Orion relationship. She'd misjudged her father then, just like she'd misjudged Roan and Gareth and Raven and Ciri. Even Whisper Sands had managed to surprise her over the years. Though the Calypsian Empress had passed into the void several years back, she had ruled well in her final days, opening trade routes with each of her neighbors that had been closed off for decades. "Why have I always been so stubborn?" Gwen wondered, as she began to climb her tree. As stubborn as an Orion, the saying went, and she was no exception. Roan had tried to teach her, but she'd resisted. For a while, but not forever. That fact made her smile. Roan was, perhaps, the most patient man she'd ever met. With Alistair, she'd been a willing participant in their love affair, while with Roan she'd had to be dragged, kicking and screaming. But he'd never given up on her, not for a second. It's just the way he was. He was too good for this world, she thought. Far too good. In some ways, Ciri was, too. Perhaps that was why the dragon had never returned. Maybe she didn't want to be found. Though such a truth pained Gwen deeply, she couldn't fault the magnificent beast for escaping this world. She only wished Ciri had thought to take her on the journey. She was trying to protect you from herself, Gwen thought, settling into her old iron hammock, finding it to still be a perfect fit, like an extension of her own body. Her inner argument was one she'd had 6,000 times over the years, but it never got easier. If she could only talk to her soul.
My soul.
Gwen jerked to a sitting position. That voice. Ciri? She said aloud,
not used to communicating with only her mind. There was silence for a few moments, and Gwen was about to curse angrily at herself for being so foolish, thinking Ciri could possibly be speaking to I. We. Us. This is hard. Confusing. We hurt you. For a long time, we hurt you. Us hurt you? I hurt you. Confusing. Gwen's breath was gone. Her heart stopped entirely. Such was her focus on that beautiful, ancient, troubled voice in her head. I don't care about any of that, she replied, falling naturally back into speaking with only her mind. I don't fault you for any of it. Where are you? Please, tell me. Please. I need to see you. You're still my soul. Ciri? Ciri? We are scared. They come for us. Ciri, who comes for you? Who? Ciri! She felt the moment the dragon departed her mind, and she desperately tried to rebridge the connection. After several minutes of trying, she slammed the heel of her hand down on the edge of her hammock. Tears burned at her vision. No, she breathed, dashing them away with her fingers. She would not be weak when Ciri needed her to be strong. I'm sorry, Gwen said to Gareth. I have to go. She'd already explained what had happened. He'd listened with his eyes closed the entire time, and now she wondered if he'd fallen asleep. She flinched when his eyes snapped open. I'll come with you, he said. Though she tried to hide her horror at the suggestion, she failed miserably. Gareth laughed. A jape. Nothing more, he said. I can barely make it to the chamber pot half the time, much less go gallivanting across the Four Kingdoms in search of a dragon. You think she's somewhere in the Four Kingdoms? Gareth pulled the bed covers higher up on his bony chest. I don't know. Can she speak to you when she's very far away? I don't know. Gwen felt foolish for not knowing, but she'd only had a few weeks to understand the intricacies of the most complex creature she'd ever come across before they'd been separated. For all she knew, dragons could only communicate with their human counterparts from close distances. For all she knew, Ciri could be less than a day's march away. If only she knew which direction to go. Don't run off again, Gareth said. Gareth, you didn't hear the fear in her. You must be patient, Gareth interrupted. She was surprised by the vehemence in his tone. I may be an old man, but I've had a lot of time to think. Many of the mistakes made by our past leaders have been because of swift and unnecessary action, myself included. Wait for her to speak to you again. Gather information. Then go with my blessing. Gwen blew out her breath. He was right, she knew. But it was still hard, especially knowing Ciri needed her. She nodded. Good. Now let's have some sweet wine and carved meat. I'll trade you my portion of meat for your flagon of wine. Agreed? Gareth fell asleep before he'd finished even his own wine. Gwen took the bed tray from his lap and moved it to the table. She polished off what was left of the meat, chasing it with a swig of wine. She departed his chambers one normal stride at a time, fighting off the urge to run. Because where would she run to? East into the sea? West toward the spear? South to Calip? North to the frozen mountains? Ciri could be anywhere. Like Gareth said, she needed to be patient, which was something she was not. Taking deep breaths, she made her way through the throne room, ignoring the guards as they nodded in her direction. She exited on the opposite side, where she could look over the great iron forest. The capital city of Feria was the same as it always was, the iron structures one with the trees, built amongst them almost as if they'd grown like that. In a way, they had— the ore buildings channeled by the Orions many years ago. Gwen remembered the first time she'd seen Ciri.
The thought took hold in her mind like a root burrowing into the dirt. She paused, trying to determine if she was being foolish again, but then thought, "Who cares if I am?" and hurried down the staircase and into the castle's inner keep. From there she ran, following the ever-widening spiral of the castle until she reached a side door that exited into the forest. The great iron hovel wasn't far, and she reached it a moment later. The structure was generally used to store food, but had once served another purpose. Dragon prison. Although theft was rare in Ironwood, the large doors at the hovel's base were locked and sealed. Gwen backed up a few steps, feeling for the familiar thrum of her hero mark on her cheek, which heated in response. Even after all these years, it was as much a part of her as her arms or legs. She sprinted forward, her cheek burning now. The wall approached, but she didn't stop, until it was evident she would smash right into it. But then she was airborne, running up the wall with such speed that even gravity's grip was thwarted. The high window she'd spotted from the ground appeared, and she grabbed the ledge with one hand while punching through the glass with the other. In a single motion, she vaulted through, ragged knives of glass breaking off on her armor. She landed on the metal landing, which had been channeled when Ciri had been captured back in 532. "So we could gape at the beast from a safe position," Gwen thought, remembering the day with fondness. They'd all been fools then, thinking they could contain the might of a dragon. Ciri had scattered them like chaff in the wind, though Gwen had managed to save more than a few. That was also the moment Ciri had seemed to see her as more than just another two-legger. Gwen had to admit her view of dragons had changed on that day, too. Now, however, the structure was only filled with food and drink. Shelves lined the sides and middle, filled to stuffing with barrels and burlap sacks. Salted meat hung drying from hooks along one side. "Peace has been good for the East," Gwen thought. "None shall starve." She sat down and closed her eyes, throwing her thoughts back to that day she'd first met Ciri in this place. "Ciri," she said. Silence ruled the day. "Be patient," Gwen reminded herself. "Ciri," she said, and then again, and again, and again, and again, repeating the name of her soul like a prayer, until exhaustion took her and she drifted away into a long, peaceful sleep. "My soul." Though the two familiar words were whispered softly into her head, they woke Gwen from her slumber with all the power of a thunderclap.
"Yes, yes, I'm here. Ciri, I'm here."
"We are hiding from the hunters."
"Who are they? Where are you?"
"A place across the great sea. Flew here many years ago. A lifetime. Maybe longer. Hid from the world. Hid from you. Too many voices. Two are quiet now. We are left. How many? Not sure."
This time, Gwen was determined to get information, and fast.
"Which sea? There are many. Please, tell me. I will come."
"We know this, but cannot ask. Must protect our soul."
"As I must protect you. I will search for you whether you tell me or not."
There was no response, and Gwen thought her dragon might have slipped away once more. But no, she could still feel her mighty presence.
"Please," Gwen said. "Tell me."
"When we fled the battle."
"The fall of all things, you mean? When the Horde attacked us?"
"Yes. That man, so much pain. His touch, it changed us."
"I know, I know. But he is gone now, dead. We are not. What happened after you left the battle?"
"We flew east, toward the Forest of Iron."
Gwen's breath hitched.
"Are you here now?"
she breathed, daring to hope.
"No. We passed the forest. The sea was full of mist. Felt safe there. The land beyond was barren. We flew further. There are lush forests nestled in valleys here. Very beautiful. we can hunt in peace. There is plenty of food. We have lived for many years in this place.
Who is hunting you?
They have no name. They are as tall as trees, almost as tall as we are. They don't hunt for food, but for sport. When they discover our home, they won't ever give up. Not until they find us and kill us.
I won't let that happen,
Gwen said, feeling the bite of tears.
I'm coming. Fly as far from them as you can and hide.
Damaged my wing. Can't fly. They are searching the mountains, smashing the rocks. We are deep, but they will find us, me, eventually.
I will find you first. Hide. Don't give up.
My soul?
Yes, my soul. I'm here.
I miss you.
I miss you, too,
Gwendolyn said aloud, for Ciri was already gone, and then she raced from the hovel. These are not waves, Gwen thought, watching as a mountain of water swept toward her tiny sea vessel. She paddled as hard as she could, her hero mark lending her strength and speed as she climbed the watery cliff. It was beginning to curl now, preparing to come crashing down upon her head. She growled through her teeth from the effort, shoving the water behind her with the oar as she shot over the wave's precipice, going airborne for an exuberant moment before crashing down with a jarring slap. The wave was past now, sliding smoothly across the night sea, which was sheened in green and red by the dueling moons. The next wave was bigger than the last. For hours and hours she toiled, until the power of her hero mark began to wane. The moment her cheek cooled, her energy flagged. The next wave was her undoing, flipping the front of her boat even as she continued to fight her way up its face. She came crashing down into the water on her back, the boat landing atop her. For several fearful seconds, all she saw was darkness. And then the powerful wave knocked the boat past, and she cut through the watery cliff, emerging on the opposite side where it was calm. It was almost eerie after the rough ocean she'd already faced. The water was flat and serene, quiet and empty. The blue-green surface vanished in the distance, where a thick fog had descended.
What new devilry is this?
Gwen thought. She twisted around to look for her boat, but it was gone, and that mist seemed to be getting closer. She glanced up at the night sky, thankful it was clear enough to make out the right stars to navigate by. She regained her bearings and looked toward the east. Her path would take her right into the fog. And then what? She could swim in circles for the rest of her life without finding her way out.
Ciri, she thought.
It wasn't an effort to communicate with the dragon, who'd been silent since her last plea for help, but an attempt to rekindle her own strength. It worked to some degree. Though her hero mark needed time to rest, adrenaline flared through her, and she began to swim. Her Aurean armor, which was remarkably light and buoyant, wasn't the problem. No, the problem was the all-forsaken fog. It clung to Gwen as she swam. When she breathed it in, her throat and lungs seemed to turn to ice. She was shivering. And the more she swam, the thicker the fog seemed to get. She was certain she was no longer moving in a straight line, but there was no way to tell. Even when she waved her own hand in front of her face, she couldn't see her fingers. Her own mind began to betray her, conjuring up images of great fanged sea creatures rising from the depths, homing in on her kicking feet, their jaws opening wide.
Ciri, she said through chattering teeth. Ciri, I'm coming.
The mantra was beginning to lose its effect, but not entirely. Not yet. Soon, however, even thoughts of her soul wouldn't be enough to sustain her.
After all these years of searching, is this how it will end? She thought. So close, and yet impossibly far, with each of us alone, our enemies circling.
She bit down on the thought and swam on into the mist. Sleep coiled chains around her ankles, trying to drag her down into the depths. Weariness, exhaustion, hunger, thirst. These were words she'd thought she knew the meaning of, words she'd, on occasion, used to describe how she felt. Gwen had never truly understood them until now.
Her lips were parched, her stomach gnawing, her very bones tired from the constant movement required to stay afloat. It would be so easy to stop. So simple. Just exist as she sank into the watery depths. She didn't owe Ciri anything, just as the mighty dragon didn't owe her. Yes, she wanted to help her. Yes, she wanted to see her again. The world doesn't always give you what you want, does it? She thought. That was a lesson she'd learned 100 times over. Still, she'd learned something else. I can give myself what I want. Screw you, world, she said, kicking harder, thrusting her hands through the water to propel herself forward. Her hero mark flared once more, having recovered from overuse. When the sun broke through the mist, Gwen might have cried if she wasn't so utterly spent. Instead, she flipped onto her back and floated for a while, relishing the warmth and the sight of the beautiful blue sky. She closed her eyes. What felt like a second later, she woke up spluttering, her mouth filled with salt water. She spat it out, coughing, gagging, and then retching what had already slid down her throat.
Ugh!
Was the only word she could manage. Is that even a word? She wondered to herself. And if so, does that mean and ah are words too? She laughed at her own foolishness, wishing Gareth were here to discuss the matter with. It was a random conversation she knew he would appreciate. The mist was gone, as if it had never been in the first place. And land. She couldn't believe she didn't spot it sooner, but her entire focus had been on that cerulean sunlit sky. She squinted, trying to judge the distance. It was still far away, but she thought she could reach it. No, I will reach it. Nothing would deny her now. As she swam, taking long, slow strokes, she observed the land. It wasn't much to look at, rocky and rough, but the thought of walking on it made her want to scream with joy. She didn't think she'd ever want to swim again. The day passed by, and she began to wish for nightfall and the escape from the heat it would bring. As it turned out, she reached land sooner than expected, just before dusk. As soon as it was shallow enough, she tried to wade the rest of the way, but ended up half-stumbling, half-crawling, finally flopping onto the rocky beach, water bubbling around her feet. She fell asleep instantly, her dreams empty.
My soul.
This was a beautiful dream. Ciri's voice was a deep rumble, calming, soothing.
We can feel you, Ciri said. You are closer.
Gwen jolted upright, her head swimming. It was no longer grey, but pink, the rising sun splashing colours over the harsh landscape. She groaned, her head pounding, her joints aching.
Ciri?
She managed to reply.
You are hurt.
Yes, but I'm all right. And yes, I'm closer. I crossed the sea.
The hunters are near. We must fight them.
No, Gwen said. Keep hiding. Go deeper if you must. I'm coming. Wait for me.
We will try.
Good. That is good.
If the dragon heard the last thing Gwen said, she gave no reply. Gwen gritted her teeth and shoved to her feet. She looked at the water, surprised at how far it had receded while she slept.
Low tide.
She tried to take a step, but her legs felt like rubber, and she almost fell. Sharp stones pierced her hand as she steadied herself. She blinked, shocked that she'd slept on this bed of knives. If not for her armor, she'd have been sliced to ribbons. She rose again, more slowly this time, and took a deep breath. One step at a time. The first was weak and unsteady, but she managed to remain upright. The second was better. The third, better still. More confident now, she picked her way across the stony beach and then clambered up an embankment, searching for something to eat or drink. Her stomach dropped when she saw what lay beyond. A vast plain, cracked and dry, and devoid of any foliage save gnarled, thorny plants that grew from the tiniest fissures in the rocks. In the far distance, she could just make out towering cliffs shrouded in shadow.
Ciri, is that where you are?
No answer. There was nothing for it. Famished and dehydrated, Gwen set out across the plains. Gwen was learning how to survive in this place. The first time she came within range of one of the tiny watering holes, she almost missed it. They were small, about the size of a fist, but deep, the water cool and clean and refreshing. The liquid was the most delicious thing Gwen had ever tasted. She drank from a cupped hand, splashing the water on her face. Her stomach roiled, and she reminded herself to slow down. Little sips were better than big gulps, until she grew used to drinking again. From then on, spotting the sources of water became easier. Tiny green plants grew around their edges. Filling her stomach with water only seemed to remind her gut of how empty it was. She was so ravenous now that she broke off several leaves from one of the tiny plants, sniffed them, and then shoved them in her mouth, chewing heavily. They were bitter-tasting, and for a moment she worried they would make her sick or worse. But then she noticed several of them were half-bitten, as if an animal had tasted them. If the animals were eating them, perhaps they were all right for her to eat. She ended up eating a dozen of them before the bitterness became too much. Afterwards, to her surprise, she felt re-energized. She wished she had her flint to make fire, but it had been lost with most of her other belongings, save her weapons, which were tucked in secret places within her armor when the sea took her boat. With fire, she could boil the leaves into a tea. Chewing them would have to suffice for now. It was in this way that she continued her journey, stopping whenever she located a water pocket, as she had named them, drinking and breaking off a few more leaves to chew as she walked. The cliffs grew ever closer, but still so far off she knew she'd be forced to make camp. She chuckled at the word, as her camp would consist of a rock for a pillow and bitter leaves for a blanket on the open plains. Darkness fell, and still she soldiered on, unwilling to stop until she'd gained as much distance as possible. For all she knew, Ciri might be discovered on this very night. Eventually, however, she was forced to halt, else she'd sleep the next day away. Just a few hours, she promised herself, lying on the unforgiving ground, which had grown quite cold now that the sun had sunk below the horizon. The next day she increased her speed, feeling stronger. Several times she tried to communicate with Ciri, but the dragon didn't respond. "Please be safe," she thought. "Please, please, please." The cliffs loomed closer, a towering wall that from this distance seemed impenetrable, without crack nor door. As the day wore on, however, she spotted several breaches in the rock fortress, narrow crevices that might offer a way through. Or they might be dead ends, she thought. If so, she could waste countless hours attempting each one. Going around could take months, for she could not make out the end of the cliff wall to either side. There was another option, but she feared she hadn't recovered enough to attempt it. I could climb. The next several hours gave her time to consider the choice, but when she finally arrived in the shadow of the cliffs, she still hadn't reached a decision, which might be the difference in saving Ciri or not. The weight of failure pressed down on her shoulders, but she straightened them anyway. "I will not be denied," she thought. "I shall climb." She approached the wall, craning her neck back to look up its face. Had it been a smaller wall, she might have called upon her hero mark and run right up it. But this cliff was immense, and even her hero mark would fail her partway to the top. But not if she took it slow, drawing upon her own strength first, only relying on her hero mark when absolutely necessary. Before she started the ascent, she drank plenty of water and tucked a plentiful supply of bitter leaves into her armor. She also rolled up several and stuffed them inside her bottom lip. She found she could make them last longer if she slowly leached energy from them in such a way, rather than chewing them directly. The early parts of the climb were relatively easy, the handholds frequent and deep. As she reached the middle section, however, she suddenly found nothing but a sheet of flat rock. She stopped to catch her breath, spitting out the old leaves from her mouth, and replacing them with new ones. The wind was fiercer here, buffeting her sides, trying to rip her from her perch. She glanced left and then right, hoping against hope that she would find a better way to continue her climb. Her heart plummeted to the earth below. All along the cliff face was the same. The wind had chiseled away any imperfections,
leaving the surface as smooth as glass. "Stop exaggerating," she thought, for there were divots in the surface, though they were small and a great distance from each other. Impossible to climb. For an unmarked human, she thought, but for a hero marked Orion, maybe not. Maybe would have to be good enough. She breathed, feeling the dull throb of the marking on her cheek, which had been waiting patiently for its opportunity to help. She dug her toes into the crack and flexed each of her hands in turn. And then she bent her knees and launched herself skywards. Too far, she thought, even as she refused to stop moving, flinging herself from impossible handhold to impossible handhold, her fingers aching, her toes bruised from stuffing themselves into the tiniest cracks and crevices. Again and again she pushed higher, but the top of the cliff never seemed to get any closer. Her hero mark was on fire, and she was almost glad she didn't have a free hand to check whether it had burned a hole through her cheek. She growled as she lunged once more, extending her arm to its breaking point, her fingers finding a minuscule fissure, somehow dragging her body behind her, contorting in such a way that her toes could replace her fingers so she could kick off and launch herself higher yet again. Then, suddenly, unsurprisingly, her progress became apparent. The edge of the cliff came into view. For one fatal moment, Gwen lost her concentration as she fixated on her goal. She missed a handhold, her body slamming into the rock, her feet kicking at the stone as she searched for something to arrest her fall, her fingers clawing as they slid along the surface, her rough, chipped fingernails breaking off completely. She stopped, her toes finding purchase. Her bleeding fingers dug into crevices of their own. Gwen didn't dare to breathe, afraid the force of exhalation would be too much. She twisted her head to look down, where the ground was but a distant place blanketed in shadow. "Help!" Ciri shouted, and the force of the dragon's plea made Gwen flinch, her fingers nearly slipping from the crack. She managed to regain her concentration, ignoring Ciri's next two shouts as she fought higher and higher, scrambling over the edge, her toes cramping, her fingers burning and bleeding, and then she sighed. The sight before her might have been a dream world if she wasn't so acutely aware of her own state of consciousness. It was just as Ciri had described it, a lush green valley, descending deep between the shoulders of the mountains that flanked it. Birds swooped above the trees, landing on branches and singing. Several thin, narrow waterfalls cascaded from the cliffs, sprinkling the foliage. Gwen noticed something else, something that didn't belong. A roiling cloud of black smoke wafting up from the trees, deep within the valley. Someone was burning the beauty to the ground. Ciri screamed. Not in Gwen's head, not any more. The sound cutting across the valley and directly into Gwen's ears. Gwendolyn Storm ran downslope, recklessly springing over boulders and ducking beneath the tree branches that tried to remove her head from her shoulders. At one point, the landscape dropped beneath her feet, and she went airborne over a cliff, managing to grab an intertwined group of vines that swung away when she hit them. Like a pendulum, they reversed course, gaining speed and ratcheting against the cliffside, her armor clanking. She opened her fingers slightly and slid down the rough rope, dropping to the ground far below. She ran on, spurred by another scream from Ciri, closer now.
"I'm coming! I'm coming! I'm coming! I'm com—"
She emerged from the trees onto a battlefield. Dozens of massive forms, giants, just as Ciri had said, were scattered about. Their features were blunter than those of humans and Orions. Their hair was long and shaggy and grew from all parts of their body. They appeared to be both male and female, though it was hard to tell. More importantly, their focus was trained in the same direction.
"My soul," Gwen thought.
The words were like a streak of lightning in her head, the moment so surreal because it was something she had dreamed about for years, decades, both when waking and asleep, but not like this. Never like this. Ciri was thrashing about with two dark heads, spewing fire in all directions. Her third head had drooped to the ground, unmoving. A pool of blood was spreading beneath her powerful feet. One of her wings was shredded, the tattered leather flapping in the breeze. The other appeared to be intact, and Ciri had wisely tucked it against her back to protect it. One of the giants rushed forward, swinging an entire uprooted tree as its weapon. Ciri lashed out with her spiked tail, landing a blow on his chest and knocking him back.
A diversion,
Gwen thought, darting forward too late. For the real attack had come from behind, one of the other giants slashing with a massive sword, hacking into one of Ciri's necks. The dragon squealed, and Gwen